Feeling somewhat safer now, I figured it was okay to catch my breath, while I also seized the moment to strip off the lion costume. Naturally, I was keen on getting out of the building and away from the tunnel system altogether, but I figured I could afford to do this much. Unfortunately, I figured wrong. Before I could make any headway in shedding my lion skin, I heard the crash bar door slam open behind me and almost instantly felt a pair of muscular arms clamp around my chest, pinioning my upper arms to my rib cage. I could feel Joey's hot breath on the back of my neck as his two encircling arms locked fingers and began squeezing. I tried calling out for help. After all, I was in the basement of the same building that housed campus security. I ought to be able to bring someone to my rescue. Sadly, however, the building was too solidly built for that, and Joey's squeezing effect was making it impossible for me to achieve much of a shout anyway, beyond the croak of a toad being stepped on. With my own hands encased in lion mitts, I was helpless to try to break his hold. I attempted some more shouts, also futile. They may have been loud enough to worry Joey, however, because he suddenly lifted me up and began driving me forward on his powerful legs. I knew where we were headed. He was aiming for the water tanks, no doubt in an attempt to cut off my calls for help by plunging my head underwater. The tank was only knee-deep, but obviously plenty deep enough for his purposes. And even without the encumbering lion suit, I knew I could never match him in terms of strength. Instinctively, I chose a different tactic. As he was putting all of his attention and drive into continuing the bear hug and the bum's rush, I put all of mine into preparing for my one and only chance. As we approached the tank, where he might have halted and thrust my head underwater, I raised my forearms and clamped onto his so he couldn't release me. Then, before he could put on the brakes, I yanked us forward, dragging us both over the rim of the tank, while at the same time corkscrewing my body at the last second, so that as we were both about to plunge into the water, we were both looking up at the ceiling. We therefore entered the stagnant water, he on the bottom, me on the top. As a consequence, instead of him being in a position to hold me underwater until I drowned, he was forced to shove me upwards and off him. Once out of the tank, I did my best to hit the ground running, but my wet footies were again the problem, proving even more slippery when wet. Meanwhile, Joey lunged and managed to grab hold of me by my tail. This would have been highly comical under other circumstances. I slipped and fell, and Joey was quickly on top of me. In seconds, he demonstrated why he had once been All-Ivy wrestling champion. No sooner had he straddled my chest, pinning my shoulder blades to the floor and using his knees to immobilize my upper arms, than he immediately commenced strangling me with his vice-like fingers. I was in real trouble now. No way to call out, not even any way to lean up and bite him, as Beverly Martindale had done. I tried bucking my hips. It had no effect. I was quickly succumbing to lack of oxygen. Little darting lights were starting to go off behind my eyes, like a swarm of summer fireflies. All of a sudden, inexplicably, he let me go. He let go of me. The instant he stopped squeezing, I immediately began gasping for air. As the fireflies faded, I found myself looking up at Joey, still straddling my chest, his hands in a strangling position still, although no longer gripping my neck. It finally dawned on me why I could suddenly see better. It was because the ceiling lights were on. Joey was looking up. I followed his gaze to where I saw a group of shocked Columbia students standing on the catwalk looking down at us. It was the crew team, showing up for their 5 a.m. practice. One of them said, "What is going on?" Still gasping, I was in no condition to answer. Joey appointed himself our spokesman.
"Nothing. Just a little disagreement. But I'm letting him go, see?"
He jumped up, lifting both arms in a magnanimous gesture as though he were forfeiting the match. None of the rowers said another word. Joey decided not to explain further. He then kicked me hard in the slats, spun around, and ran to the door. He flung it open and vanished down the torpedo tube tunnel. The crew team did not exactly leap over themselves in giving chase. Who could blame them? Like anybody's face when they are in the act of strangling someone, Joey's, already gargoyle-like, had taken on a particularly menacing appearance. The rowers were solicitous, all of them offering to help, to get me to a doctor, to take me up to security, or else bring one of the guards down to assist me. I shook my head, pleading by holding up my hands that I still needed another minute to recover. Meanwhile, they discussed what they had seen, how shocked they were by it. To a man, each volunteered to serve as a witness if it ever came to trial. Finally, in a croaky voice, I requested only that they accompany me back to my room in Fernald. I'd take it from there. To this, they readily agreed, particularly as this was in the opposite direction from the way Joey had fled. With their assistance, I climbed the catwalk. Looking back down, I saw the choreography of our violence diagrammed in the smears and wet footprints on the cement. It looked like a tango-style dance chart to a slaughter.